This is Tuesday, April the 30th, and we are here for our podcast of our Dover NASCAR race review and Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining me for today's show is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Great to be here on a Tuesday afternoon, I guess, or Tuesday morning. It'll come out as a podcast in the afternoon. So excited to be here, talking a little racing about this past weekend at Dover.
Yes, indeed. We appreciate everyone's patience. I know last night we were all set and ready to go, and then we couldn't access our studio at Blog Talk Radio. There was an issue. And so we had to postpone it until this morning. So thanks, everyone, for your patience. Jay, thanks for being here to help us persevere and still be able to get our show in for this week. Okay, we are going to let me go ahead and give you the overview of today's show. We're going to start, of course, with our short track news. Then afterward, we're going to review the ARCA Menards and ARCA East Series race that took place out at Dover on Friday. And then we're going to update the ARCA West and the NASCAR Truck Series. Those series did not race over the weekend, but we'll make sure that you know when the next race will take place. Next, we're going to comment on the post-race interview with the NASCAR Xfinity Series winner. That was Ryan Truex, 2 years in a row that he's won at Dover. And he drives the number 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing. And afterward, we're going to review that race for the Xfinity Series at Dover. Then we have another interview with Denny Hamlin. He was the winner of the NASCAR Cup Series race, driving the number 11 for Joe Gibbs Racing. And after that interview, Jay and I will comment after both interviews. And then after this particular one, we will get into the NASCAR Cup Series review of the race at Dover. And then we'll end our episode with Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fan for Racing crew. I'm not sure if anyone's available for that today. A lot of times folks have to work. So it might just be you and I, Jay.
Well, I know we got a couple of things on the board that are certainly worth talking about a little bit, and I know you got the preview show on Thursday, or the preview show on Thursday. Might have to tie some of them back up if more of the Fan for Racing crew are available. So we'll see what we get to here coming up for Hot Topics.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started with our short track news. Do you want to start with what seems to be a weekly event now in the Dirt Series?
All right, let me see if I can get my notes pulled back up now. I know what you're referring to. It's that dreaded R word, but...
Yes. Well, I can go ahead and get started. The dirt scene in the world of outlaws for sprint cars, severe weather again made safety a lot more important than racing here in the Midwest. The World of Outlaws race at Knoxville Raceway was a complete washout. So if you want to know when those races are rescheduled for, what you may want to do is head over to theworldofoutlaws.com, and I'm sure they will update everyone when that happens. Are you caught up yet, Jay?
Yep. For the Lucas Oil series on lucasdirt.com, it was a split. As Ricky Thornton Jr. scored his fourth series win of the year at Georgetown Speedway, after leading all 49 laps along the way. The next tour's next planned race, though, which was his trip to Hagerstown Speedway, was canceled due to weather.
Okay, and on the USAC side of things, you might notice a trend here. The USAC's planned race for the weekend at Kokomo Speedway was a wash again. A lot of rain in the Midwest and the East here. In the Southeast, has been washing out a lot of races lately. So, again, if you will keep our eye over at USAC Media and see if we can find out when those races are rescheduled for. But let's find out what happened in the Southern Super Series.
Well, there we had it was kind of a quiet start to the year for Stephen Nassy, but that short track standout got back to the front in Friday night's win at Five Flags Speedway, and that's covered by Matt Weaver from Short Track Scene.
All right. And an intense feature at Mobile International Speedway saw Cole Butcher beat Jake Finch by just 0.02 of a second on Saturday. So very close race there. Matt Weaver covers that over at Short Track Scene if you want to know more about that. I bet that was a thriller.
I saw a short clip of it on X where they had corrected. I think the announcers actually called it three different ways before they finally got it figured out. So, yeah, it was a close one for sure. Now, Hickory Motor Speedway, their dirt track standout Corey Day emerged in his late model stock debut, earning a feature win at Hickory for Junior Motorsports. And that's also covered by Matt Weaver, a Short Track Scene. And I think Junior Motorsports and these late model drivers something we're going to have to talk about in Hot Topics.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we've got some upcoming races. Both are taking place tonight. If you're in these locations, you might want to get out to the racetrack. Otherwise, you can watch both of these races on Dirt Vision. The weekly racing at Millbridge Speedway will start at 6:15 p.m., and the weekly racing at Beaver Dam Raceway starts at 7:30 p.m., and I believe both of those are Eastern times, and they're taking place tonight, so a weeknight race out at the local short track, so check it out.
Well, you always got to appreciate that and enjoy it when you have that opportunity. I know it's kind of tough during the week, if you will, to get out, but there's a reason for it. Weekends get a little crowded, and weather obviously playing an issue across the country, as Sharon mentioned.
Right. Yes, indeed. And if you want to know what the upcoming local races are in your neck of the woods, we'll cover some of them on Thursday, but you can go to Flow Racing and Racing America, and they have a banner at the top of both of those pages that tell you the upcoming races that are taking place across the country. So I know there's more racing on Wednesday, Thursday, and so on. There's going to be a race at the Bullring. I believe that's at Las Vegas at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So you can catch all kinds of racing at both of those locations. Now, there's some other storylines that we might want to follow over at Racing America, and I think you alluded to one of those stories, Jay.
Which one is that? Let me get that pulled up here.
Well, Toby Christie. I'm mixing my movies up with my NASCAR. Toby Christie wrote a story today, in fact. It's Toby's take, the paved short track racers making the most of their opportunity in NASCAR. Carson Kwapel had a great race in the Xfinity Series race. So a lot of talent in the wings here, and I think you can read more about that over at Racing America.
That's certainly an addition to the one I had seen, and again, it kind of highlighted Carson Kwapel, but definitely want to take the opportunity to read that article from Toby, because I think we're really starting to see that kind of build towards the future. I know we always look at that of what does the future hold and where these next stars are coming from. With today's technology, get on these sites like Racing America. Matt Weaver does a great job of covering all. Toby Christie as well. So appreciate them because those names are coming.
Yes, they are. And if you want to see that 0.02 of a second finish that we just talked about, there's a video of that over at Racing America. That was between Cole Butcher and Jake Finch. And I'm telling you, we're talking inches or maybe even less than an inch when it comes down to that close of a finish. So if you want to see that close finish, head over to Racing America.
The other thing here on Racing America, they're starting to pop up with some of those. We're coming closer to Darlington, the throwback schemes. I know that Kyle Larson's Kellogg's throwback paint scheme was revealed already, but there's also Brad Keselowski with a Castro one and Jimmy Johnson getting a throwback scheme by Alex Bowman with Ally as sponsor now, but it looks like the old Lowe's car. So check those out. That's not something we can really truly even provide for you here on radio, but they are some sharp-looking cars. Hendrick Motorsports so far looking really stout.
Yes, indeed. And that's something that I think the drivers, the fans, everybody looks forward to, the throwback weekend at Darlington. So definitely something to look at. You can also watch, if you're a subscriber, you can watch the JEGS CRA All-Stars at Anderson Oxford Championship Series over at Racing America as well. And then Jan Evans won that Leonard Evans Memorial 150 at Wenatchee Valley. So you can read more about that over at Racing America as well.
And talking about watching racing, Flow Racing, as you've gotten tied that in several times already, it doesn't matter what part of the country you're in, you can watch on Flow Racing any type of racing you want to see. And I know that they have already made the deal to come back and cover this year's Snowball Derby at the end of the year in December. So that's one you want to tune in to Flow Racing, as they'll have exclusive coverage of the Snowball Derby.
Oh, yes. The Snowball Derby is something we look forward to every year. There's also the 2024 Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series at Port Royal Speedway. They have the results listed there. That's the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series. And they've got some video of that race as well. But if you want to see the actual results, Ricky Thornton Jr., we talked about that. Mike Marler came in second. Garrett Albertson, Jonathan Davenport, Devin Moran, those are your top tie five finishers. So you can learn more about that over at Flow Racing. And some other headlines, there's a recapping a chaotic night at Port Royal Speedway. There's a five-minute video that you can watch there that kind of gives you a recap of some of the other racing that took place at Port Royal.
Again, so appreciative of Racing America and what they provide for the grassroots racing, dirt track racing, all the way down to there's some stuff on the Legends feature with Keelan Harvick. So any kind of racing information you need, check out Racing America, a good spot to get all your racing needs fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that Flow Racing acquired the Snowball Derby broadcast rights. I think that's awesome. But you can also read more about Dirt Prodigy, Corey Day, winning that late model stock debut at Hickory Speedway. That's over at Short Track Scene. So a lot of fun racing going on in the short track scene, and we try to bring as much of it to you as we possibly can. So, but those three websites always has all of the details of what's going on the short track scene. All right, let's move on to the ARCA Menard series. Now, I know I mentioned that the ARCA East did not race this weekend. Their next race for the ARCA East is going to be, I'm sorry, the ARCA West race. Next race will be on May the 31st at Portland International Raceway at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that will be covered on Flow Racing. And then I might as well, I'll go ahead and give you the other races for the ARCA platform. The ARCA East, we're going to review the race that took place out at Dover in just a few minutes, but their next race is the Music City 150, May 11th out at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. That will be covered on Flow Racing. And the next race for the Arkham Menards Series is coming up this weekend. We'll preview it on Thursday, May 4th, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, the Tide 150 out at Kansas Speedway, and that will be televised on Fox Sports 1. For the Truck Series, the next race for the Craftsman Truck Series, they did not race this past weekend, but they will be racing at Kansas, the Heart of America 200 on Saturday, May the 4th. That race will take place at 8 p.m. Eastern, and, of course, we will preview it for you here at Bampa Racing Radio on Thursday. But, Jay, let's go ahead and get into the race that took place out at Dover Motor Speedway, two series, one race, the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East, and we had a big winner.
We certainly did. It was Connor Zilich who won Friday night's General Tire 150 at Dover Motor Speedway. He is now credited with a victory in both the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA Menards Series East. He is the 359th driver to win at least one ARCA Menards Series race and the 130th driver to win at least one in the ARCA Menards Series East.
Okay, that along with Jake Finch's victory at Talladega Super Speedway last weekend, it becomes the first time there have been back-to-back first-time winners in the ARCA Menards Series since Tyler Ankrum and Luke Fenhouse won at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course and Iowa Speedway in consecutive races just last year. So kind of cool to see that happen twice in two consecutive years.
And Finch won the ARCA Menards Series East Racer at Dover in 2023 at 17 years, 10 months, and 13 days as far as age. Now, Zilich picking up his win in 2024 here is 17 years, 10 months, and 4 days. So beat that by 9 days, actually.
Wow, that's pretty close. That is really close. Gio Ruggiero finished second at Dover, his second runner-up finish in two career ARCA starts. He also finished second at Phoenix in March. And Ruggiero, who won the series opener at Five Flags Speedway, now officially leads the ARCA Menards Series East Championship standings. He's at the lead, though, just 3 points over Connor Zilich. So that's going to be a battle, I think.
Another one that'll tie in is Carson Cavopoulos. He finished third in his second career ARCA Menards Series start after finishing second in his series debut at Kansas Speedway last September. He finished second in Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series race at Dover, and we'll get to that when we review that race.
Yes, indeed. He had a really great weekend for Carson Cavopoulos. All right, LeVar Scott from nearby Carneys Point, New Jersey, came home with that fourth-place finish from his home track. That was in front of dozens of friends and family members. It was Scott's first top-five finish of the season, and it ties his best career ARCA Menards Series finish. So congratulations to LeVar Scott at his home track.
And Andres Perez unofficially assumed the main ARCA Menards Series championship points lead with his fifth-place finish. Perez's unofficial lead is just 1 point over eighth-place finisher Greg Van Alst. How about that?
Yeah, that's amazing. Chris Wright persevered for a sixth-place finish. That was despite getting together with a Venturini Motorsports teammate, Tony Breidinger, on lap 136. Unfortunately, Breidinger's day was cut short, and she ended up with that 15th place finish. Not the day she was looking for, but it was good to see that Chris Wright was able to recover.
Another story we always like to hear about in the ARCA Menards Series is Andy Koyak, as he scored his best finish of the season in seventh, his first lead lap finish of the season.
And Caleb Costner, he earned his first career Marker Menard Series top 10 finish. He came home with a ninth place spot. His teammate D.L. Wilson finished 11th, so a good day for that team.
And Zachary Tinkle, a name we know from the ARCA Menards Series, was awarded the 2023 General Tire Spirit Award during the pre-race drivers' meeting. He finished 10th, and it was his first top 10 finish in the ARCA Menards Series since he finished 9th at Berlin Raceway back in 2023.
Okay, another familiar name to us here at Banff Racing and in the ARCA Menards Series is Christian Rose. He led the ARCA Menards Series championship standings entering the General Tire 150, but unfortunately he had hard contact with the turn four wall. He completed lap 74 and finished 21st. Rose has finished in the top five and four of his last six ARCA Series starts. So that race was not one of his best, but I'm sure he will rebound.
And most certainly, when you look at those stats, going to be one of the contenders this year for the championship. Another one we got to look at, one of these young drivers, William Sawalich, set a track record in the General Tire pole qualifying at 161.812 miles per hour and led 67 of the race's first 108 laps. Unfortunately, he and Zilich made contact while racing for the lead after the second of two scheduled race breaks, and his Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota made significant contact with the turn four wall, which ended his day in the 17th position. It is the first time in his 10 career ARCA Menards Series East starts that Sawalich has finished outside of the top five.
Wow, definitely not what we usually see from William Sawalich. Alex Klupp made his 50th career ARCA Menards Series start. He competed 96 laps before an electrical issue ended up sidelining him. He left the track with an 18th place finish.
I know Sharon already covered this, but the next ARCA Menards Series race is going to be the Tide 150 at Kansas Speedway. That'll be May 4th, and the race will be televised on FS1 at 2 p.m. Eastern and broadcast on the select affiliates of the MRN radio network nationwide.
Okay, we've already kind of covered the points here for each of the series. Let's see. I wanted to see if we could get down. I like this new points report that we're getting because it tells you who moved up and down in those points. Do you want to cover that, Jay?
All right, we do enjoy the E-Series
right
the...
now.
Okay.
Let's start with the East and then we'll do the West. I mean the main.
All right. Oh, okay. I pulled up the main. You got the East. Go ahead.
Okay. Gio Ruggiero, as we mentioned, is at the top. He's only 3 points over Connor Zilich. Connor Zilich actually moved up two spots after this race at Dover, so that's pretty cool. He does have the one win and two starts. And actually, his stats along with Gio De Ruggiero are pretty much the same. William Sawalich dropped a spot. Zachary Tinkle moved up four spots, as did D.L. Wilson and Cody Dennison. Michael Maples actually moved up five spots. So another big mover of this race was Rita Goulet, who moved up four spots. So congratulations to all of those drivers who actually improved their points position in the series.
Well, and covering the main ARCA Menards Series, you're right, Sharon, that's kind of a cool addition that they've done with that. We mentioned Andres Perez moving into the points lead for the ARCA Menards Series, now up by 1 point over Van Alst. Van Alst actually stays in second position. Christian Rose coming in as the leader dropped two positions due to his 17th place finish. Amber Balkan stayed in the fourth position, and those are the only two, Van Alstyne and Amber Balkan, the only two in the top 10 that did not move one way or the other. Some others moving up. Chris Wright was up two. LeVar Scott moved into six, moving up three. Andy Jakowiak moved up four into the sixth spot. That says eighth. Tony Breidinger moved up one into the seventh spot. Alex Klub up two spots into the ninth spot. And Caleb Costner up seven spots to move into the top 10. The only thing that you got to look at there, that was a lot of people moving up into the top 10. That unfortunately means some people moved out.
yeah, that does happen. But we'll see what happens with the next race. A lot can change. They've got four starts already in the series, so we'll see what happens when they resume back. Okay, now then, I know we're a little bit ahead of schedule here, but I do want to, let me look here. I do want to look here. We've got a post-race interview by Ryan Truex. It's a 10-minute and 41-second interview. I think I'm going to go ahead and play the whole thing, Jay, because we won't be able to play all of Denny Hamlin's. But we'll comment on Ryan Truex's interview after we hear the question and answer session in the media center after the race. He, of course, drives the number 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing, and it's 2 years in a row that he's won at Dover Motor Speedway in the Xfinity Series, so a big accomplishment for Ryan Truex. We'll listen to that interview now.
By our race winner, Ryan Truex. Congrats on back-to-back wins. How do you feel?
I feel really good. I'm a little bit surprised, honestly. If you told me 50 laps ago that I was going to win, I would have said you're crazy. Definitely was not as easy as last year, that's for sure. I just put us behind the eight ball in qualifying, starting 12th. I knew we started 12th last year, but we struggled a bit with being too free here today. So the team did a great job. It took me a while to figure out the restarts. I feel like I was just giving up too much. And then the last pit stop, I absolutely butchered it. And thankfully it didn't rain because we would have finished like 16th. So really, the credit goes to the team. Give me a good car. Tyler Allen, the whole 20 group, they're winners. And they've won with everybody in their car now this year. So glad I could add my name to that list. And Tyler Green up top did a great job of making me, letting me choose the right restart lanes. That was a big thing at the end, I think, was being in the right lane and being able to get a launch and give a good push. And when I was able to, get to the front, car was a lot better. I was a lot more confident in it. I was able to feel like I was able to steal one a little bit, which I've never done that before. So it's a pretty cool feeling.
Well, congratulations. We'll go ahead and open up for questions. If you have one, raise your hand and we'll get to you. We'll start in the back with Jeff and then come to Reed.
This win last year, you were hoping you could leave something full time. But since then, you've only, in the last year, raced six starts. This is your sixth time racing, I think, since then. So how difficult is it to be able to show up with such a, herky-jerky, halting-type basis of starts and be able to go still perform as well as you did today?
It's really hard. That's, unfortunately, I have a lot of experience at it because I feel like I do it every other year or every year. The big thing that's helped me is Toyota, TRD, having, all the tools at my disposal to become a better driver, the people I have surrounding me, from fitness to being able to go to the sim all the time. I spend a lot of time in the simulator, which helps me a lot, I feel like, and it's made me from the past 2 years. You're just surrounded by winners and successful people. And I feel like it just kind of, it rubs off on you a little bit. And I've learned a lot in the past 2 years and feel like I'm the best I've been. And really the one thing I'm lacking is being out there every week. Because even like today, it took me half the race to get my racecraft right because I don't do it every week. I know I've run four races this year, but three of them were super speedways, which is completely different to this style of racing. So my restarts at the start of the race weren't good. My pit road definitely wasn't very good. And it was just all me. But if I do it every week, then that all comes to me right away, as soon as we unload off the truck. So I feel like if I was out here every week, I'd be contending for wins every week. And to go out and do it like that after dominating last year, I feel like for me it proves a point that I was able to, you know, win with a car that wasn't the best. We ran 8th to 10th the whole race and just had really good restarts and we were able to steal one. So to win two times here in completely opposite ways, I think is, at least for me, is a testament to what I'm capable of.
We'll go to Reed.
Reed Spencer with the NASCAR Wire Service. Before the last restart, Carson's team was debating top or bottom, and so it seemed like it was about a 50-50 call. Were you surprised you got the bottom, and were you happy at the time that you were there?
Well, going into this race, we thought top was going to be preferred, and last year it seemed like it was, but it's situational. It's really dependent on who's in your lane. You know, a few restarts before that, the 88 was on the bottom and had really, really bad wheel spin. And then the 21 was on the top and restart as the leader, and he had really bad wheel spin. That's when Sheldon, I think, got the lead, or he got the lead for a second. But he got a jump on the 21 on the bottom. So it was weird that it kept flip-flopping. And a lot of it's, you know, you pick up on the track, and sometimes you pick up just the bottom lane, sometimes both lanes. Then you throw a little rain in the mix. Like, it was – I felt like we could have won from either the lane. I felt more confident in my car on the bottom. I was glad I had that entering 1 and 2. I think if I had the top outside of the 88, I wouldn't have been able to run with him through 1 and 2. He was really good on the bottom, and I was just too loose to run up in the rubber. So I was glad I got it. And biggest thing for me, you know, I could enter really, really far into the corner all day on both ends, but really into 3, I was strong. And that's where a lot of people struggle. So I knew it was going to be really important to just latch onto his quarter getting into 3. And, you know, I was able to drag him back enough where we were even. And then I just took the lane away from him coming to the white. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised because he had so much wheel spin on the bottom, but I was surprised at how much lanes changed throughout the race and even throughout the last few restarts. And I think a lot of that's just the way we pick up the rubber on the track.
We'll go to Dan, and then right up here to Adam.
Thanks. Actually, Dan Gelfand. Last year you had your father and your brother in victory lane. Were they here today?
Oh, yeah, they're here.
They were here today?
Yeah.
All right. I guess, again, to experience that with your family, you know, anything amusing said about it? Like, here you are, another family reunion and victory lane.
Yeah, right? It seems like it. Martin was pretty pumped up again. Not as much as last year, but he was still pretty pumped up, and so was my dad. And obviously, my fiance Leah was here, so she said she was at the walk at the crossover gate with like 15 to go. She's like, "Ah, he's 16th or whatever. He's gonna be grumpy. I better just go wait for him." And we just had some good restarts and it worked out. But yeah, it's to win twice in both of my home track and have family here. You know, all the fans are so cool, and they all cheer for me. Probably because I'm Martin's brother and they all love Martin, but I'll take it. But it's really cool when you get out and have that much support. Huh? She came back. Yeah, she's right here. Yeah, she was in victory lane. I think she said a tire guy picked her up and pushed her here on a tire cart, so she didn't have to walk too much.
We'll come right here to Adam.
I'm Jobber Motorsports today. First off, congrats on the win run.
Thank you.
So the last question kind of already harped on what I'm about to say, but earlier I was able to ask Martin what he thought about both of you sweeping the wins here last year and whether you guys have reminisced on that. So I guess where I'm going with this is, like you said, 2 wins in 2 years here on a part-time basis. What's your home track? Just how are you feeling right now, the emotions of being able to get it done twice now?
It feels good. It definitely feels different than last year. You know, it's hard to replicate your first win. But like I said, to do it the way we did it feels really, really good for the car we had. That's really what I'm proud of the most. And yeah, the pressure is definitely on Martin now to go out tomorrow. And maybe it'll rain. They'll race on Monday, and then he'll win. But, yeah, Now, I know nobody wants that, but I'm just saying it's good for him. Pressure's on, and hopefully he can do it again.
Awesome. Congrats again. Thank you.
We'll go to Lee.
Lee Spencer, Series 6, from NASCAR Radio and CatSense.com. I was telling Steve D'Souza, and he was saying that, you know, everyone's working to try to get you sponsorship. And I'm just kind of curious what, you know, if something was able to happen, what would it be like to have a home where you're at, where you know anytime you get into this equipment, you're capable of winning? And just talk about the challenges of even somebody who wins and has won, you know, twice back-to-back here, it's still difficult to find the dollars.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I've dealt with it my whole career. It's just part of it. But there's, you know, there's 37 other guys out there that figure it out. So this definitely helps. And I feel like having two now on a part-time basis is a big statement, you know, that I should be out there every week. But it feels like home already to me, honestly. You know, I spend so much time with the sim guys on the cup side. I'm at the cup shop all the time, and I'm at TRD all the time. You know, I've driven the wheel force car. I've done a lot of things on the back end side that most people don't see, and I don't really share. I feel like I'm terrible on social media now. But I do a lot behind the scenes. I feel like it's already home. And then the Xfinity races to me just feel like a bonus, and a chance for me to go out and prove myself. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's obviously, yeah, it's about sponsorship, and days like this and runs like this help with that.
We'll go right here to your left.
Seth Wilcock with In Between Media. Ryan, you now have two Xfinity wins at your home track. What's next on Ryan Truex's bucket list?
Whatever race I run next, win that. And then the one after that, I think I have five races left, six races. How many have I run? Four? I don't know. I got like five or six left, so try to win as many of them as I can and, you know, just keep showing that I can be diverse and not just win at one track. I got an interesting bunch coming up, so, yeah, just looking forward to getting back in the car. And hopefully between now and then I can stay sharp.
Are there any other questions for Ryan? All right, Ryan, congratulations. Thanks for
your time.
All right, that was the interview with Ryan Truex after winning the NASCAR Xfinity Series race out at Dover Motor Speedway. Jay, what are your thoughts about what he had to say?
Well, there is a whole lot to go over when it comes to Ryan Truex and that win. I had heard some of the interview portions of it anyway on Sirius XM while I was listening on the radio. The one thing is you can't look at just the results and the record books. You know, the great story, he won it 2 years in a row, back-to-back years, part-time start. But he went into so many things of the difference between the races. Last year, they had the car to beat, couldn't nobody touch him. He dominated. This year, technically, he did not lead during that race. It took to get to overtime before he even got to the front and in that position. You know, he mentioned somebody leaving the track there with a few laps to go because they were in 16th. As it shook out, they were in position. And one of the things I got there that I didn't catch during any of the other interviews was the difference between lane choice, even in the last two and three restarts, that it was flip-flopping. How tough that's got to be. And just, you know, because you're choosing based on what you think you've seen in this race. You know, initially you go based off prior years or prior experience. They were going based off this race, and you couldn't do that because he said it was changing up every time they restarted. So that's really interesting to hear from a driver. When you heard him talking about it, I know he's happy with the opportunity he gets, trying to make the most of it, but he said he spent the first half of the race, and I heard this during the race weekend, feeling that the first half of the race he was trying to hone in his racecraft, just get accustomed to the car again, because he's not in the car itself on the track every week. And how tough that is, and then still come out with victory. It's amazing.
It is amazing. I know during the broadcast, and I was listening to the race on the radio. I was driving home I heard the announcer say, we haven't heard anything from Ryan Truex yet today. That was last year's winner, and it's kind of surprising that he's been nowhere to be seen this year. And then, you know, he told the story of his girlfriend saying, oh, gosh, he's in 16th place at the end of the race, probably not going to be in a good mood. And yet he was able to still put himself in position to be able to race for that victory at the end. I think it says a lot about who Ryan Truex is, and it makes you wonder, Jay, why he doesn't have a full-time ride. Ryan Truex is right. He has dealt with that his entire career, and yet we know he's a good driver. We know he can make it to victory lane. And as he said earlier in the interview, he thinks he could be out there contending every race if he were able to race every race. So I really hope the sponsors take note of Ryan Truex after this weekend and really help him get into a full-time ride.
Well, and you asked the question and then you answered it, because it is the sponsorship. And that is the final key element. You heard him talk about Joe Gibbs Racing. There is his home. He's spending time in the simulator, apparently doing some stuff on the Cup side the way it sounded as well. So he's locked into that position. It's just a matter of that opportunity opening up. And we saw that with several drivers. Alex Bowman, I know, at Hendrick Motorsports. Ryan Preece at Stuart Haas Racing. It's tough, and you got to grind through it and just have faith in the future. But if you're in that position, that opportunity will come. And he's certainly making the most of it. Like he said, that's what he's looking at, is that next race. He's not worried about bucket wins or whatever. He's looking at that next race, because that's what he needs to do at this point.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and get into the Xfinity Series review part of the race. Again, we've been talking about it. Ryan Truex steals the win in a thrilling Xfinity Series race at Dover. He's the hometown favorite. Ryan Truex prevailed in that double overtime finish in the Bet Rivers 200 on Saturday afternoon. He led only the two final laps during back-to-back victories at that one-mile track. So, again, for the second consecutive season, it was Ryan Truex celebrating in victory lane. Truex took the lead for the first time in that double overtime and went on to lead those last two laps for his second career victory in just his second series start. The 88 of Carson Kvyat finished second after taking the lead late in the race and leading 14 laps. Then it was Sam Mayer in third place. Sheldon Creed came in fourth. He and the Stage 2 winner, Cole Custer, rounded out the top five. A.J. Allmendinger came home sixth. Then it was Chandler Smith, Kyle Weatherman, Anthony Alfredo, the winner of the Dash for Cash bonus money, and Parker Retzlaff completing the top 10. Justin Allgaier led 39 laps and won the opening stage, but he crashed to bring out the final caution. He ended up with a 17th place finish. There were 11 lead changes among 10 drivers and 10 cautions for 61 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 87.395 miles per hour, and the margin of victory for this race was under caution. So there really wasn't a margin of victory, but super kudos to Ryan Truex for that second victory at Dover Motor Speedway. Your thoughts about those top 10 finishers and Anthony Alfredo winning the Dash for Cash bonus?
Yeah, I don't know what kind of time limit we're on here, but I'm going to give it a shot. It's not just about the top 10, first off. It is about that race, and this is one of those. To do a review post-race like this is really tough if you didn't see it, because when you look at, you mentioned the laps led, Cole Custer, I believe, was the top one, leading 95 laps. You know, him and Justin Allgaier looked like the two to beat. They had a little bit of a rain shower, which set up kind of a positioning for those last 30-some laps, I believe it was. They ended up shuffled back. Cole Custer managed to work his way back up to fifth through, towards the tail end of it. Huge story there. And all of this, so many things that the storyline in this case is Ryan Truex, and it's a great story. Could have been a great story for Carson Knappel. He was the one leading when that final caution came out. You had Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill. That one has a historical story to it. They were on the front row going wheel to wheel, and I was surprised. I was waiting for that call of those two take each other out, and Carson Knappel gets the lead. They were battling hard but staying clean, and Knappel still managed to get by him. And like I said, then you had Cole Custer. Sam Mayer coming back into it at the end. He was kind of with, if I remember correctly, Cole Custer and Justin Allgaier, when the rain put a halt to it, he's one that came in and pitted first. Custer and Allgaier kind of waited to see if the rain was going to stay. Then fuel became an issue. And actually, Mayer, I take that back. Mayer's the one that ran out of gas trying to get to pit road before anybody else had pitted. That's what it was. So he manages to get back up in it. So there are some great stories, but you did hit on one there as well. A little bit of shuffling at the end for the second week in a row to see a team like our motorsports get the $100,000 dash for cash is so cool. Anthony Alfredo got his second top 10 in a row after finishing ninth. Listen, if you can find his post-race interview, what that means to that team, and a team that is struggling for sponsorship, for budgets as far as team members and everything else, what it means to that team is huge. And that's why I really love that dash for cash. And we've seen it now 2 weeks in a row with Seed getting it the prior week.
Absolutely, and it is a huge, huge story for a team like our motorsports and Anthony Alfredo to win that $100,000 bonus. As you mentioned, they have very few employees, and that money will go a long way to help that team throughout the rest of this season. So a very popular win for Anthony Alfredo for the Dash for Cash bonus. He didn't win the race, but it was a big win for our motorsports and Anthony Alfredo with the Dash for Cash. The highest finishing rookie of the race was Shane Van Gisbergen. He came home with that 8th finish. And there were a few incidents, as we mentioned. There was a lot of jockeying. J.J. Yaley was out early, though. He had an accident that took him out on lap 4. Ryan Sieg had an engine issue. Boy, the way they talked about that car, it sounded like he was just in a ball of fire. Took him out of the race on lap 25. I was so happy, said he was able to get out of the car. At one point, they weren't even sure which car it was. They mentioned Matt Benedetto. They thought it was his car, but they came back and reiterated that it was Ryan Sieg. Blaine Perkins had that electrical issue that took him out of the race on lap 47. Corey Heim had an engine issue, very unfortunate for him. He was out on lap 85. Taylor Gray out on lap 183 because of an accident. And Sammy Smith, another contender, out because of an accident on lap 192. So there were Matt DiBenedetto was the last car able to finish the race. 32 cars finished the race. Matt was down multiple laps, but he was able to finish that race. The number of cars that finished all 208 laps was 20 cars. Daniel Dye, the last car in that group of cars. But like I said, I didn't actually see the race. I only heard it on the radio, but it sounded like there was a lot of action happening in that race, Jay.
Well, and you mentioned it, and I did have it recorded and went back and watched it when I got home. I, like you, was listening to it on the radio live, but watched the replay when I got home. Talking about that fire on Sieg's car.
Ryan Sieg.
To me, it reminded me of Jordan Anderson at Talladega. I mean, he was working to get out of that car before it came to a full stop. I know Jordan Anderson's was really scary because it looked like he might get pinched between the truck and the wall when he was trying to jump out while it was still rolling. But, yeah, that's what they were having a tough time telling which car it was because the flames that engulfed it and the smoke that came up around it, they couldn't see in and find out whose car it was. And then to see him come jogging to sprinting away from the car out of the smoke was good to see, and hopefully he's doing okay. I know that firemen battle that, or what gets in your lungs, that smoke can be really hazardous, so hopefully he doesn't have any carryover effects from that. But no, he definitely was hoofing to get out of that car.
Yes, he was, and I know that the smoke inhalation can be very serious, so I am, I know we're all wishing the best for Ryan Sieg as he recovers from that incident. You want to cover points report, Jay? Oh, go ahead.
That's one of those they talked about. I know you're hooked up to your air system, but if that gets into the air system, it's being fed directly into the helmet, and that was one of the things they asked, was if it was from there, hopefully he was able to disconnect that real quick and not have it pump directly into him. So again, hopefully he I haven't heard any reports on that over the past couple of days, so hopefully he's good.
Yeah.
All right, when we look at the point standings, Chandler Smith is your points leader. He's got 2 wins and 3 stage victories for a total of 13 playoffs. Leads by 1 point over Cole Custer, who doesn't have any race wins yet, but has 2 stage wins. So he's got a couple of playoff points built up, sitting second. Austin Hill, the other one with multiple victories, 2 wins, 2 stage wins, has 12 playoff points built up. Jesse Love has 1 victory now after his Talladega win, but 4 stage wins, so has 9 playoff points built up. Justin Allgaier, 4 stage wins for 4 playoff points. He's right now in 5th and is 81 points back. Riley Herbst had a good run, apparently, or not a good finish here this past weekend, but still sits in 6th with 1 playoff point in his bucket. Then you got A.J. Allmendinger, Sheldon Creed, Parker Kligerman, and Anthony Alfredo rounding out the top 10. Parker Kligerman, the only other one there with any playoff points built up. You got to hit 11th and 12th, though, for the Xfinity Series. That'll be where the cut line's at. Sammy Smith and now Brandon Jones, your two that are in 11th and 12th. Unfortunately, Ryan Segan got slid back a little bit in 13th. Sam Marin, 14th. And actually, I take that back. The cut line's going to have to be shifted because Sam Marin does have a victory in the 5 playoff points. He'll bump his way up. So the cut line is actually 11th, which is Sammy Smith, Brandon Jones on the outside looking in. Then you got Shane Van Gisbergen, Brandon Poole, Parker Retzlaff, Jeremy Clements as your other, and Leland Honeymoon as a rookie. Your others that are regular competitors, because I know Eric Almirola is there with the victory, and Ryan Truex, but mentioned they're part-time.
Correct. So they're not eligible for the playoffs, but you know, the two that moved up in the standings, though, and good for them, are Sheldon Creed moved up 2 spots from 10th up to 8th, and Anthony Alfredo moved from 12th place up to 10th place. And then Brendan Jones, it didn't help him get into the playoff picture because he's still below the cut line, but he actually moved up 1 spot as well. So really fun to watch. They've got 10 races in already, Jay.
Yeah, that's amazing. I can't believe we're that far. We're coming up on May. I mean, we always look at the Charlotte race. It used to be All-Star race and then the 600 as far as on the Cup side. But that kind of being the midpoint of the regular season and where you know where you're at, we're coming up on that here in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get into our post-race interview with Denny Hamlin, driver of the number 11 for Joe Gibbs Racing. He was the winner of the Cup Series race, and that interview is about 19 minutes, 32 seconds, but since we've got a little extra time here, I'm going to see if we can't get as close to 15 minutes as possible so we can hear most of that interview, but not all. So let's go ahead and listen to that interview now.
We're now joined by today's race winner of the Word 400 at Dover Motor Speedway, Denny Hamlin, driver the number 11 for Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. If you have a question for Denny, raise your hand and we will get a mic to you. We'll start right in the front here and then work our way back.
Yep. I'm Dropper Motorsports today. First off, congrats, Denny. So yesterday you mentioned how last week's win that Tyler had, it was great, obviously, for 23-11, but as a competitor, don't always like to see it. Now, being able to win yourself for literally the next week, what's that like, being in victory lane 2 weeks in a row but in two completely different roles?
It's been a good season. I don't know how else to explain it. You know, to be in five victory lanes in the first, I don't know how many, what race is this, 11 or 12 or something. So
11.
Yeah, I mean, half of them we've been in victory lane, and, you know, the other ones I've been right there with a shot to win them. So it feels good in the groove right now for sure, and certainly feel like, you know, you want to celebrate these, right, because you just never know if it's your last or anything like that, but I'm just so focused this season on getting a lot of wins and, you know, trying to move that tally up as high as I can. So, yeah, certainly happy for the team last week. That kind of set in on Monday, Tuesday. Sunday, it's very, very hard to just flip a switch and be, you know, bummed about your day and then all of a sudden, okay, be excited. It is just a little different. It is different when you win it yourself versus when you're a car owner. It just feels different, but certainly we've been on a good run.
Awesome. And how are you feeling about your chances next week at Kansas, a track that since the next gen car debuted, Toyota, both you and 2311 have performed exponentially well?
Yeah, I mean, I expect to win every week. You know, there's no reason I shouldn't expect to win. You know, and so I think that I'll focus on it tomorrow, but it's been on the radar for a while. I mean, this little stretch right here, right before the All-Star break, is, you know, between Dover, Kansas, Darlington. I mean, these are all kind of right in my wheelhouse, so certainly feel pretty good about it.
Stay up front, then we'll go to Bob and Mark.
Denny, Eddie Kalegi, Motorsports Today. Congrats on the win. Obviously, Dover, no secret, one of the toughest tracks to pass at, and the next-gen car difficult to pass with. And a real important moment in this race was when you were able to jump both Larson and Bowman on pit road and then keep the car there. So can you take me through that moment and then being able to hold off Kyle in that final stretch?
Yeah. I'm trying to think when that was. We had a few pit stops afterwards. I think Larson just did a much better job than I did after that moment when we, you know, gained some track position. That was a key moment for sure. Then we came out on pit road with the lead. And then at that point, I can't remember what happened after that. Oh, we led. And then, you know, we had another pit sequence under green, and Kyle just, you know, beat me pretty bad coming to pit road. And at that point, he took back over the lead. But I just felt like my car was so good in the short run that I wasn't really worried about when we came out behind Kyle, even though there was, you know, only 60, 70 laps left. That's easy for me to say because I think he's probably one of the best at defending his spot. But I just was confident in how fast my car was. The pit crew just did a phenomenal job. And, you know, they're part of the reason why I expect to win every single week is that, you know, I know I've got one of the best pit crews. I've got one of the best teams, best engineers and crew chiefs. So there's no reason I shouldn't expect to win. As long as I do my job, then we're going to be part of the conversation. So it's a fun time, and, you know, this is certainly more of a team sport than it's ever been.
Go to Pop, and then Mark.
Bob Hockers, Fox Sports. How good are you at defending your spot, especially, you know, late in a run such as today?
I don't think I'm great at it. I think that there are certainly some that are better defending their spot than others. I don't put myself very high on that list. I've got so many other things. You know, I'm trying to get faster week to week, and certainly, you know, defending is an important part of your finish week in, week out, but I'm so focused on whatever I can do to be faster in general. So, you know, I think that I'm probably pretty low on that list, but, you know, which makes me a little worried, you know, when you're going up against Kyle at the end of the race, someone that's not afraid to move around the racetrack. He's not stuck to one line. His car was really good in the long run. He kind of reeled us in a little bit in the previous green flag run. So I was certainly nervous, but I also knew that as long as I just did my job, hit my marks, and didn't have any major blow-up laps, and that's ones where, you know, it pokes out high on the graph where, you know, I missed my line or got caught in traffic, then I was going to be able to hold him off. But he certainly made it more interesting than what I really wanted. Mark?
Mark Garrow, PRN. Danny, earlier in the week you kind of predicted this, so how does it feel to come through and sort of be the Babe Ruth calling your home run shot here today?
Yeah, I think we did it back in 2012 as well at New Hampshire. We mentioned that we were going to win that week, and I felt pretty confident of it. And you better win if you're going to open your mouth, that's for sure. So certainly, the way that race is starting to play out at the end, I'm like, boy, this is just, you know, I can't give up the lead at this point after I said that. So, you know, hopefully some listeners of Actions Detrimental maybe cashed in on today.
Danny, my other question is, this is 54 career victories. You're now getting into some rarefied air. You're tied with Hall of Famer Lee Petty for 12th. You're one behind Rusty Wallace. What does it feel like to be in that kind of territory?
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. I mean, if you put all the names on the list and the orders of the order of the wins that they have, I don't know. I see my name as just an outlier, one that sticks out like it doesn't really belong there. But I've been doing it a long time, and you take for granted all the wins that you've had, and all we think about is the ones that we didn't win. I'm like, man, I feel like I should have 80 or 90 realistically. But everyone has those stories. And so I just, you know, have – this is my personal goal. You know, before I end my career, I want to, you know, I want to get to a number that puts me, you know, well inside that top 10 of race winners. And I think that, you know, that will speak for itself in its resume.
Denny, we'll go to your back left over here. Seth Wilcock, In Between Media. Denny, you now have 3 wins in 11 points-paying races this season, 4 including the Clash. You had 3 all last season. What's been some of the biggest improvements on this number 11 team overall that's led to this success early in the season?
Well, I think me and Chris just keep getting better. He continues to challenge me and push me to get better. He holds me accountable. I hold him accountable. And so I think that it's just, you know, we're in year 5 now of working together, and we just keep getting better. We're starting to understand each other a little more, and we kind of know where our deficits are and where we need to work to win more races. And, you know, if you would ask me 6-7 years ago, winning at Dover, I would have said, you're crazy. It was by far my worst track. I just hated coming here each and every time, but, you know, he led me in a direction to get better. And, you know, really paid off over those last 5 years.
Denny, we'll go to your back right, and then Jeff.
Back at Tanzavetti, kicknatires.net. Lawson mentioned how one reason the aero blocking is easy is because of the rear camera. He said he ran the camera earlier to fend off Bowman when he was up front. Did you use it? And if so, how does that assist you versus a rear view camera? Or rear view camera, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I use it at times, but I didn't use it much today, simply because Dover is just a track where things happen so fast. I feel like personally, if I take my eyes off the road for a second and I take it to the camera, I'll miss my line. So I kind of rely more on the spotter to defend than I do the actual camera, just simply because I don't think I'm good enough to drive and look backwards.
That he would be for it if the cameras were removed, you know. Would you think it would be a small fix in the right direction?
No, it wouldn't change anything because the spotters would tell you where to drive. So it's just, I'd rather fix the bar or tire or something.
Jeff, then Dustin.
Just in general, the philosophy of learning how to defend
to this degree on tracks like this. You know, it's one thing for super speedways how it used to be, but, you know, to take somebody's airway on intermediates and now a track like this, like, what is the evolution of that been? Like, when did drivers first start adding that to their toolbox from your view and realizing that, like, oh, we need to do this?
I think it was when we went to the 550 package on the mile and a half in Gen 6 days. So is that 2019? When we started running the big-ass spoilers, low horsepower. At that point, that's when it kind of started for sure, and then it's just kind of ramped itself up a little bit since then. And honestly, we're running a car that just hates being in traffic. It does not like being behind another car. So that's why it races really well on tracks that are really wide, because the second-place guy can just go wherever the leader is not, but it's a cat-and-mouse game. You know, sometimes you start the corner here and then you just drive up when you see that, you know, all you need to do is get him to cross your wake and you know that you're going to send his car, you know, off track. So it's just it's a product of the car and it just happens all now. So it's I think it happened 5 years ago when we went to the intermediate package that we went to.
Dustin?
Denny, this is the second time that you've won three of the opening 11 races of the year, and then obviously the Clash as well. So do you feel like this is the best start that you've had over your 19 years?
I've had so many years, it's hard for me to, you know, I'm sure ones that slip past, you know, that you don't pay attention to. But, I mean, I think we've led in every race this year, and not by accident or through pit cycles. Like, we legit lead. So, yeah, I would say this is the most competitive. I think it's probably only our third top five, though. We have three wins, three top five, so we either crash or we win. So I really wish I could have Texas back and a few others. But, yeah, I would say that it's probably the most competitive that I've been to start a season, absolutely.
You're right up front here.
Elliot Stern, Sports Talk 805. You've now won, counting the Clash, four short track races this year, and you've been progressing a quarter mile, half mile, three-quarter, and a mile. Now, two questions. Does that make you the king of the short tracks? And Kansas is coming up. Will you progress to win on the mile and a half?
I'm not going to call my shots just yet. I need to soak this victory up first, but, I mean, I'm optimistic. I mean, I've said it a million times, every 7 days I can win. And it's just, that is so hard to come by. There's probably legit four, maybe five people that can do that, just because of the team they're with. They're good enough. They're good at all types of tracks. And we're one of those. And so, I mean, I feel good about every track that we go to. The only thing that frustrates me is I'm not getting results at super speedways, where I used to have a big influence on the finish, but now I don't, just simply because of how the draft works. So everywhere we go, you know, short of kind of road courses, I still got some work to do there. But if we're turning left, I like my chances.
All right, we're going to end it there. Your thoughts about Denny Hamlin's interview? I know he touches on some things we'll talk about in Hot Topics as well.
Yeah, that was one of the things was I was going to say. We're certainly going to come back to some clips from this when it comes to Hot Topics with the drafting or blocking, air blocking. But one of the things that I look at, and I heard some more of this on SiriusXM radio this morning, of what can be done. Sounds arrogant, says he can go out there and win every week. But that's truthful. He's backed it up with his three victories, tied for the series lead with William Byron, and think about some of the races that got away. And I know drivers talk about that. You know, he said with his career total of where he's at, reaching that elite rarefied air tied with Lee Petty right now, but he's looking at, man, I could be at 80 because of the ones that got away. You know, so it may come across as arrogant, but it's really not. And I think they're right. Right now, that team is one that is firing on all eight cylinders, and weekly is one of a handful that you can say, I think they can pick them and they are going to win this week, no matter where they're at. So I know, Sharon, you're with me. We've had some things we don't agree with Denny on. On this one, I mean, I got to agree with him. I really do. They are right now one of those teams that you better be looking at every week.
Absolutely. We've been a little hard on Denny Hamlin sometimes, but I do think he's showing that this could be his year if he's able to keep that up for the second half of the season. He certainly dominated, I think, in the first half of 11 races, and he's, you know, won almost half of those races. So you're right. He's backing up what he's saying. He kind of hesitated, though, for Kansas. He said he wasn't ready to call his shot there, but he's certainly optimistic, and he should be optimistic because he does have a chance at every track that they go to, and he's showing that he's good on all of the tracks. So you did mention super speedways. They're not his forte any longer, but there's, what, four super speedways on the schedule. So well, I guess you got to count Atlanta now, too. But I think Denny Hamlin is in certainly rarefied air. I think that you cannot dispute the talent that he has on the racetrack, even though I don't care for some of the ways that he approaches things sometimes. I do think he is a very, very talented driver, and he backs up what he says on the track. I like some of his comments that he made about he'd rather see the changes with the car or the tire. And I think that that's a very valid point. I think the challenge for Denny Hamlin is going to be whether or not he can sustain, because that definitely is the hardest part of winning a championship. You can be hot in the first half of the season and completely go cold in the second half of the season. So that's going to be the challenge, I think, for Denny Hamlin. Race 11, there's 11 races in. It's just two more races, and that would be the Goodyear 400 at Darlington and the Kansas race. After that, that's 13 races. That's half the season into the books after the Darlington race. Then you've got North Wilkesboro Speedway with the All-Star race. And then when they come back after that, the Coca-Cola 600 marks the first race of the second half of the year. And that's going to go all the way through to September when they race again at Darlington. That's going to be the last race of the second half of the season. And let's see, where we start counting down the last 10 races of the season. Let me count that out. 13. Iowa Speedway starts the 10-race countdown before we get into the last 10 races of the year with the playoffs. So Iowa Speedway, I'm definitely looking forward to. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if Denny can keep that momentum going for the second half of the season and into the playoffs. That's going to be the biggest challenge.
And here's something, I take it to another level of that, not just the second half of the season. We've seen that with teams that have multiple wins going into the playoffs and the playoff points they've built up. But the statement of it seems like we either win or we wreck. And that goes for William Byron as well. You talk about those two having the three victories apiece. Denny Hamlin, I know we'll get to this in the points, but is fourth in points. William Byron, six. And they're the two that have three wins. Everybody else only has one. That means there's more consistency week in and week out from these other four teams that are up there with them. And that's huge.
Correct.
So I think that's where you got to look at it. It's not that you're not winning and running good, but you got to finish good. Because we saw that with Martin Truex, Chase Elliott, that wasn't enough to carry them. The playoff points weren't, because when they were off, it was for a couple of weeks, and you just can't have that when it comes to the playoff format the way it is. So unless you're getting that win. Now, if you're winning one out of every 3 weeks, then you're in good shape. But you also got to be consistent, because if you're not winning or you're winning or wrecking, you may not have the points to carry you through. So that was one thing. You mentioned the other, and I know we're going to tie this into a hot topic, so I won't go in real much, but what to do with the car, the tire, the camera. I know that was one of them specifically that got addressed. So it's certainly interesting. The only other aspect there that I thought somebody brought up was the uniqueness of being in victory lane back-to-back weeks for different reasons. He wrecked out of Talladega, but he was still in victory lane as a team owner versus as the driver. So that's kind of unique there that he was back-to-back in victory lane, but for two entirely different reasons.
And two entirely different teams. All right, let's go ahead and get into our review now of the NASCAR Cup Series race at Dover Motor Speedway. Denny Hamlin grabbed his third Cup Series win of the season at Dover, and he did call a shot, saying on his radio podcast that he was going to win, and he absolutely expected to win and did win. Now, he backed it up, of course. He held off the championship leader, Kyle Larson, by just 0.256 thousandths of a second to claim his third win of the season and the 54th of his career. He's now tied with the legend, Lee Petty, on the all-time wins list. Denny Hamlin got his second win at Dover as well in that mix. Kyle Larson finished second, followed by Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott. Noah Gregson had a good run for Stewart Haas Racing. And it was Ryan Blaney, Alex Bowman, and Daniel Hemric, along with Ty Gibbs, rounding out the top 10. Stage 1 was won by Martin Truex Jr., Stage 2 by Kyle Larson. I was hoping for a double Truex weekend, but it didn't happen. There were times I thought it might, but it didn't happen. There were 12 lead changes among 9 drivers and 5 cautions for 42 yellow flag laps. The average for the race, 119.433 miles per hour. Josh Berry was the highest finishing rookie with his 14th place finish. So your thoughts about our top 10 finishers here, Jay?
Well, there are some good storylines in the top 10, but when you talk about the race, to me, it was those top three, maybe fourth there with Alex Bowman, and that kind of got addressed in his interview, the tight squeeze on pit road. They went three wide, actually four wide on pit road. Bowman made a decision to back out, and I'm still confused. I don't know, Sharon, if you got to watch that, but he was madder at Larson than he was at Hamlin, and Hamlin's really the one that made the move to go around another car and push them both up further, where Bowman opted to back out. And that was a key factor, as he mentioned, when it came down to winning the race, because you got to then hold. You get that track position, being out front, you got to hold it. And we saw that Kyle Larson closed in, but couldn't get around him. And we'll talk about that with the hot topic issue of the aero blocking. But Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, and Martin Truex, I know you mentioned him. To see him come back, we saw the damage that he had on his car, and I'm trying to remember how he got it. But what's surprising that, I mean, his car was that good because he had some damage that should have affected him.
Yeah, he bumped that car. I'm trying to think if it was Bowman or not. He bumped the car in front of him.
I do think it was Bowman.
It.
You're right.
Yeah, I think it was Bowman. But yeah, it was a fun race to watch, no doubt about it. Denny Hamlin, we didn't really hear from him in the first half of the race. He showed up at the end, though. Did you have anything more you wanted to say there?
Fourth place, Kyle Busch, great run for that team. They started on the pole. Kyle Busch talked about it, having more normal weeks like that of starting up front, running good, finishing good. Chase Elliott continuing his momentum. You mentioned Noah Gregson, top Ford finisher, not just for Stuart Haas Racing, but all Fords. Ryan Blaney right behind him, though. Alex Bowman, another one. Right now, we see the momentum with HMS Bowman, one of those HMS teams starting to pick up as Chase Elliott didn't got a victory. But then ninth place, Daniel Hemric. And I believe, I don't know if that was his second one in a row as well, of second top 10 in a row. Some great momentum for that college racing team. And then Ty Gibbs. And Ty Gibbs is one that we've been saying, hey, he's going to win in the next couple of weeks. He's right there. Didn't hear a whole lot from at Dover, but managed to get a top 10 finish. And I mentioned that, though, that's what it takes is that consistency in being there. He's not as close to knocking on victory door like he has been, but he's still then consistent. It's not that he finished way in the back.
Yep, consistency definitely still counts. And with regard to Noah Gregson, he did have a really good finish. I was proud of him being the leader for Stuart Haas Racing in the Cup Series race. That was huge for him. As far as Alex Bowman, I think if he watches that replay, he'll understand what happened there and take it a little bit easy on his teammate. But there were only 17 cars who finished all 400 laps of that Worth 400 race. There were a couple of issues that took place, taking drivers out of the race. Ryan Preece was out due to a safety issue on lap 66. Michael McDowell had a hub issue that took him out of the race at 285, lap 285. Then there was Ricky Stenhouse having an accident on lap 320, took him out. Lap 328 for Christopher Bell due to an accident, and 329 took William Byron out of the race because of an accident, as was Bubba Wallace. That was kind of a big incident that took both of those drivers out on lap 329. There were 31 cars who finished the race. Several of those, of course, as we mentioned, were multiple laps down. But I thought there Carson Hocevar was the highest. No, Josh Berry was the highest finishing rookie of the race. But Carson Hocevar certainly made drivers know he was there on Sunday. He was kind of in the mix of things a couple of times, for sure.
Yeah, there was. Again, great racing and stories throughout the race. Again, someone maybe didn't quite get the finish that we expected or thought maybe should or could have had, Carson Hocevar being one of them. I know Corey Heim, a lot talked about him filling in for Eric Jones. Solid. Finished 25th. His teammate was a few positions in front of him, Jimmy Johnson a few behind him. So right there where that team's been running. So that was a big thing of stayed out of trouble, didn't cause a lot of issues. I think it was, what, three laps down? But right there where the team's been, so at least didn't lose any ground as far as the team momentum.
Okay, you want to go ahead and cover the point work then, Jay?
All right. Well, mentioned the points, not necessarily how you'd think it would be based off the wins we were talking about. Kyle Larson is your leader, has six stage wins and a total of 11 playoff points. But Martin Truex, and we've seen this in the past, Mr. Consistency there, second in points, no wins, only two stage wins, but consistent. Chase Elliott has moved up into third. Another one, we saw the one victory now. He has really been consistent throughout the year. He's 33 points back from his teammate Larson. Then you have Denny Hamlin with the three victories, Tyler Reddick with one, William Byron with three. Those are your top six. Then seventh, this would be junior Mr. Consistency, Ryan Blaney and Ty Gibbs. Alex Bowman mentioned him. He's been working his way back up. You like that one, Sharon?
I like that, junior Mr. Consistency.
and we saw last year in Ryan Blaney's championship run, he wasn't up there winning every third race or so, but he was consistent and it paid off. So rounding out the top 10, Ross Chastain. Then 11 through 16, you got Kyle Busch, Chase Briscoe, Joey Logano, Chris Buescher, and Bubba Wallace. That's only 15th. 16th is Brad Keselowski. However, Bubba Wallace and Brad Keselowski are out because 17th is Christopher Bell. You want to talk about winning or wrecking. Christopher Bell has a win, two stage wins, seven playoff points, is 17th in points. Daniel Suarez got that win in Atlanta, has not been consistent week in and week out, 18th. So those two are going to bump in, and right now they're 17th and 18th. Then you got Austin Cindric. Your top rookie is Carson Hocevar, you mentioned, Noah Gregson. Those two right now, I believe, are on the uprise. Then it's Legacy Motorsports, John Hunter Nemechek, and Eric Jones. And now Eric Jones missed a race, so he's in 23rd, but he just lost points by being out of the car this week. So some interesting things there. And you talk about this second half of the season. There's some drivers down there we've seen on the verge of getting a victory. Michael McDowell in 29th has actually come close to winning a couple this year, and he's down in 29th.
Yeah, some big gainers here. Noah Gregson gained six spots in the series point standings with his finish, which was awesome to see. Kyle Busch gained six spots on the points with his finish. Chris Buescher moved up two. Joey Logano moved up two, as did Denny Hamlin, moved up two spots. So we'll have to keep an eye on those gainers and losers. I like to focus on the ones that are gaining spots, but the two big gainers this week were Kyle Busch and Noah Gregson. So really, really good weeks for both of them, even though they didn't win the race. They had really good finishes that kind of gave them points, gave them spots on the points list.
Well, and I want to tie that back to the Xfinity Series real quick. I know we talked about Anthony Alfredo in winning that $100,000 dash for cash. In his interview, he said that a couple of times. Let's not overlook, and again, that was another one that had their second top 10 in a row, moved up in points, as you said. They're within the playoffs at this point. The focus of that is what the team has been doing week in and week out. He's grateful and knows that $100,000 is going to be huge for the team, but bigger than that is on track, and that's being consistent. Go from 15th to top 10, top 5, and then start knocking on that door for victory lane, taking that step and staying there.
We'll have to do a trivia quiz with everybody and see if they can tell us how many times we've used the word consistent in this show. Okay, but it definitely is the key. And a lot of people think with the Chase format, the consistency doesn't count anymore, but I think we're proving that that is not the case, especially with this season. So, Jay, I'm going to do a bridge here between our review part of the show and our Hot Topic Sound Off. We have not done this in a while, and I know it's a terrible year for me, but let's give a – are you prepared to do an update on our fantasy points?
I did have the chart saved, so I'm pulling them up as you were transitioning. I got the feeling that's where you were going.
Okay. Yep.
All right.
Definitely. We have not had a report, I think, yet this year.
Yeah, normally I would do it on Thursdays on the preview, and being that Brian's been doing the preview show, you're right, I don't know that there has been. So on the truck series, we'll start there. I know they're going to be back in action this weekend at Kansas. Mike leads with 38 points. Brian is second with 29. And we talk about points, single points here. I'm at 28. Owen at 26, tied with you at 26, Sharon. And he's back at 24. And then Tommy at 17 and Mr. Randy, a random pick there that we've been doing at the end, has got 13 points. Randy does good in some of the other series, but not there in the truck series. The Xfinity series. I'm at the top there. I didn't realize that. 46 points. Sharon, you're second at 42. Tommy's at 40. Mike at 38. Andy, 37. A little bit of a gap there. Brian to 33. Randy at 28. And Owen at 25. On the cup side, Mike is at 57, Brian at 54. Here's where Randy actually has come into play. 53 points is third in points, only four out. Tommy's at 50. I'm at 47. Andy at 44. Owen at 33. Sharon, you are on the list here at 31. That's one where you're really hurting, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really hurting in that series.
Total overall, Mike's leading at 133. I am 12 points back at 121. Brian a five behind me at 116. Then Tommy 107. Andy 105. Sharon, you're 1 point short of the 100 mark, 99. And Randy's got 94 and Owen 84. And I'm trying to think, I think Owen and myself had early picks this week. Let me see real quick if I can find that back. I know we've had some of them come in already. I think the Cup Series, we had most of them picked already for the Cup Series. Well, half. Sharon's got Kyle Larson. Tommy's got William Byron. I had Chase Elliott, and Mike has Tyler Reddick. So waiting on Owen on that one. And the trucks. Did you put up a truck pick yet?
Well,
Aaron?
Owen took Martin Truex. Oh, and Andy took Hamlin.
Okay. I thought I saw some come in from last night to this morning. I hadn't updated the chart, so there you go. And I think you went with Heim there on the truck series, correct?
Yep, I'm the only one who I think who's picked so far on the trucks.
There we go. So we'll
and Brian, we'll get with, Brian has the next pick in both of those.
There we go. So yeah, that one's going to be interesting. The Kansas Cup Series. Still waiting on one HMS driver. Two of the Gibbs drivers have gone. Which I mean, those are the ones to go with at this point. You know, that's a talk on SiriusXM Radio is HMS versus Joe Gibbs Racing. Since William Byron versus Denny Hamlin when it comes to the three apiece, so leading the pack for each of those respectively. But we see a lot of teams that are right there on the verge. And that was something, going back to Denny Hamlin's interview, if I may for a minute again, he said it of, you know, he used to be the super speedway driver, and that's kind of gone away. Other teams have caught up, but now he's taken over as a short track king, if you will. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and you know, we talk about that. When you're on top, you got to stay on top of your game because these other teams are searching and going to find something to catch up. So I thought that was kind of an interesting aspect that he was aware of. His super speedway had kind of gone away, but his short track has come up.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. And he's had the most complaints, I think, about the short track package. And yet, that's where he's improved the most.
Well, and there is a couple of things that I know Jimmy Johnson, they talked a lot about that with Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson, like Kyle Busch, admitting they got to learn how to drive this car because it's just not what they're used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Kyle Busch is teetering on breaking through there with that, but because he had a good run this week, although he did have some his share of challenges as well. But it's definitely interesting to see how different people, and we said it actually, that some of the people who excelled at the previous car are going to struggle with this one because it's going to require them to break some habits that they had from the other car. And I think that's proved itself out. The newer drivers adapted to the newer car much more quickly than the veterans did.
Well, and especially, like you said, kind of when it comes to the short track, for sure. And I can tell you what Jimmy Johnson has said. I don't know what it means. He said you got to learn to drive the car off the right front instead of the right rear. And Kevin Harvick backed that up. I don't know what that means as far as doing so. But that's apparently what you got to learn to do. So
it sounds like driver lingo there. All right. I've got to tend to something for just a minute here. Why don't you go over? I think we've got four topics that we're going to hit on here for Hot Topics. Why don't you overview those four topics? I should be back momentarily, but I do have to take care of something real quick.
All right, I can do that. As I get them pulled up, where's our Hot Topics sheet? I know one of them that I put up was Kyle Larson talking about the aero blocking, which we've heard a lot about over recent weeks, the car in the front driving around, messing up the air. And it's not necessarily a new topic, but the way they're doing it, and Denny Hamlin talked about it in his interview, the camera. Kyle Larson feels the camera is the key element, whereas Denny Hamlin was saying it's not, because that's not what he was using. And there again, I kind of had to agree with him. I'll get into that when Sharon gets back and we start talking about these. Sharon posted one, though, the vendor's happy with the moving of the car number forward. If you remember, and I don't remember how many years back that's been now, where they car number to the quarter panel on the rear. And I was one that was not a big fan of that, but again, it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the race. Well, the big thing is vendors are happy with it when it comes to sponsors. John Wood taking on a team president role at Wood Brothers. That's another one Sharon put up. And then the other one that I had put up, and this one to me almost would have caught me off guard if I'd have just seen the headline. Kevin Harvick's going to be in an HMS car for the All-Star race. Fill in those details. He's going to be practicing and qualifying the car of Kyle Larson, as Kyle Larson has some scheduling conflicts as he's doing the double with Indianapolis. I believe that's qualifying day, practice and qualifying. So Kevin Harvick going to come out of retirement, if you will, and be in an HMS car, which was, like I said, if you read that headline and, yeah, you'd think it was fake news. And I think I heard Sharon come back.
Yes, I am back. Which one of those do you want to start with, Jay?
Well, being that I just wrapped up on that one, let's talk about Kevin Harvick being the fill-in guy driver for Kyle Larson when it comes to the Indy All-Star Race scheduling conflict.
Okay. Yeah, Kevin Harvick, I think it's going to be cool to see him in an HMS car. And I think he's going to do well. He's going to do the practice and qualifying. That's good news for Larson and for the All-Star race. And I think it's going to be popular with the fans to see Kevin Harvick back behind the wheel and participating in those practice and qualifying sessions. I think that Kyle Larson, it's going to be interesting to see what he does with his double endeavor with the Indianapolis 500 and then flying out to Charlotte Motor Speedway to finish up with the Coca-Cola 600, the longest race in NASCAR. And both of those are endurance races. And he's challenging himself with being able to take on two endurance races in one day. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he does. I think if anybody could do something like that, it's got to be somebody like Kyle Larson. What are your thoughts?
Well, most certainly. Most certainly when you talk about a driver, we've seen several do it. And off the top of my head, I can't say who's done it the best. I know Tony Stewart had a pretty good run at it, as did Kurt Busch, I believe, was the other one that was pretty solid with it. I truly believe, just not to take anything away from Tony Stewart, but I think Kyle Larson has shown the capability to really have a top shot at winning both. Again, it's the scheduling. The biggest thing is the scheduling, getting between the two, especially if you do good at Indianapolis. The post-race stuff kind of puts it into a window of crunch time getting to Charlotte, but here with the All-Star race is a matter of the practice schedule and qualifying for the two events. I'm with you, Sharon. I think the fans are behind it. I think Denny Hamlin's one that posted something about it being a PR explosive deal, being that Kevin Harvick's in the booth, retired and in the booth, helps as far as then being in the car and, you know, going to a different organization, maybe seeing things a little differently. I'm a little surprised, though, as far as when it comes to a couple of aspects. Again, he came out of a Ford. I know as a broadcaster, you're no longer affiliated with a particular manufacturer, but he did come out of a Ford. There are some Chevrolet up-and-coming drivers or some solid veteran drivers. Talk about having the reserve drivers from the Xfinity Series, maybe of Sam Mayer or Justin Allgaier from Junior Motorsports, and then the size differential between Kyle Larson and Kevin Harvick. They were talking about that with the way the seat is and whatnot. So there again, it kind of leans me towards Justin Allgaier, of still a veteran driver, a little more closer to size-wise as far as Kyle Larson, that they wouldn't have gone from that perspective. But I do think it is a huge thing for NASCAR as a whole to have it be Kevin Harvick. Like you said, the fans are going to enjoy it. I think it'll be great from a broadcast perspective then as well.
Yes, indeed. I think this is a we've been talking about how these crossover drivers are so good for the sport, and not just for our sport, but for their sports as well. And this is the same kind of thing. You are doing a crossover thing. Larson's going over to the IndyCar. You know fans are going to be tuning in to IndyCar to see how Kyle Larson does. And then Kevin Harvick's going to be in the seat for the practice and qualifying for Larson. And fans are going to tune in to watch that when maybe they wouldn't normally do that, but they want to see how Kevin does coming back into the car. So I think this is a win-win-win-win-win-win all the way around from every perspective you can look at it for all the parties involved. I don't see any downside to this at all. I guess probably the only downside I see is Larson's going to have probably need to rest a little bit after the day is done. But he's a stamina kind of guy, and I think he's going to be fine. But even a guy like Kyle Larson, when you do two big races like that, the Indianapolis 500 and then the Coca-Cola 600, he's still going to be tired when it's all said and done at the end of the day.
Well, most certainly, and that is a key factor. You said, I was talking about the logistics and the travel. The hydration and rest is the other big factor in being able to accomplish it. But as I said, we've seen several drivers do it, so that they kind of have a plan. They can lean off of some others, and it's even more advantageous in this day and age with the private jets, the helicopters that they got to move people around. The only drawback, you said it's a win-win-win-win-win-win. The only drawback to it that I see, and I say that kind of alluded to it, is Harvick is a driver. And I don't want to take anything away from as he finished up his career. We know that Ford hasn't been on top of their game, as well as Stuart Haas Racing. Harvick is also one of those older generation drivers that may fall in the same category as Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch and Jimmie Johnson, of not being the best at adapting to driving this car the way it needs to be. And that's where I say there was a little bit of question as to why they hadn't chosen a different driver, as far as one that's been in this car or doesn't have the ingrained knowledge of how to drive a different car, that they'd be more adaptive to it. So that's the only thing I see, but overall I think it will work out fine. We've seen Kyle Larson come from the back at North Wilkesboro to win, so even if that's the case and the car isn't quite right and he can overcome it, we've seen that before. So overall, I do think it is a overall win for sure.
Yeah, but you do bring up an interesting point. Kevin Harvick, who is driving Fords and struggling in this next-gen car, will now be driving a Chevrolet. And if you think back when he was racing with Richard Childress Racing, he was driving Chevrolets. One thing that we might find out is that Kevin Harvick didn't forget how to drive when he was driving a Ford. It could be that the Fords are just challenging to drive. And Kevin Harvick may adapt very well to the Chevrolet in the next-gen car, maybe better than he would have than he was able to adapt with the Fords. So I don't know that that's the case, but I think that's certainly a possibility. And so I'm not going to be surprised if he does really, really well in the Chevrolet next-gen car for Hendrick Motorsports. Think about it. The two teams that are excelling in the Cup Series right now is Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing. You're talking Chevrolet and Toyota. So they found something that Ford is lacking. So maybe Kevin Harvick will learn something he can share, or maybe they'll withhold that their secrets from Kevin Harvick. I don't know. But I do think it's really good to see Kevin Harvick coming out of the booth and getting in the car. One of the things that I think is really important is that the drivers stay in touch, or the booth people stay in touch with what's happening with the cars and on the track, and this gives him a chance to get some behind the wheel time that will help him as the booth announcer as well. He's been a good addition to the Fox Podcast booth. There's no doubt about that.
And you're right. That does add that, even though he's only 1 year removed of even just within this year, being in the car directly hands-on always makes a huge difference when it comes to that of talking about it from the broadcast aspect. So that aspect, you're right, certainly is. And I did find that other article that I was talking about. Denny Hamlin called it a golden PR move as far as it being Kevin Harvick the one to fill in. So overall, the wins certainly outweigh any possible concerns. Definitely going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And like you said, the things that come out of it down the road, certainly going to be. I don't know if they'd, like you said, have a non-disclosure agreement as far as, hey, whatever you learn here, you can't share publicly or back to any Ford teams or anything else like that. Certainly could be an interesting dynamic there.
Yes, indeed. It'll be fun to see Kevin Harvick behind the wheel regardless of all of that. But I'm sure he'll have a lot of fun with it as well. Okay,
and I think that'll relate to fun for the fans as well. Like you said, fans are definitely going to tune in to see it.
Okay, what's your next topic for us to touch on?
Well, you had put this one up, and I heard a little bit about it on Sunday's race. The vendor's happy with the moving the car number forward.
Yeah, that was by Adam Stern. Put that up on his page. He wrote an article about it, I think, in his Sports Business Journal. Patrick Zindrick, he actually reposted a post by someone else. Patrick Zindrick is the vice president of corporate partnerships with Kroger. And his post says, fact, our Kroger Racing Program partner brands are loving the much talked about and controversial number change to our cars. The data shows that moving the number forward on the side of the car has been beneficial to our sponsors. What has your experience been with the change? So it really, Adam Stern goes on to say, the vendor partners, he just restates what Paul Zindrick says. But if the vendors agree with that, that's very, very good news, regardless of how you might feel about it. If the vendors are happy about it, that means there might be more vendors willing to be a sponsor in this sport. That kind of news is really big for drivers who are looking for sponsors. So I think it's a very good thing that he came forward to say that, and that they really like having that bigger spot on the car for their sponsorship and for their visibility and exposure in the sport. So I think it's a positive thing. What do you think, Jay?
Well, I don't know what point you came back to my recap there. I was one of them. As far as a fan, the look of the car, I was not a fan of it. But you're right. And not to say that fans aren't important, but it is much more important for the sponsors. And that's where during the broadcast on Sunday, unfortunately it was during a caution, but it was the Kroger team happened to have the Hungry Jack paint scheme, pancake scheme on Ricky Stenhouse when they were talking about it prior to him getting into the wall. But that was a big thing. So we talked about it through several aspects, Ryan Truex being one of them earlier in the show. Sponsorship is a very key element to racing. So if that's what it takes to keep them happy and some of us fans, maybe not as much. And now, like I said, I wasn't going to be like, hey, I don't know the numbers. I'm going to quit watching racing. So I know there are some fans that take it to that extreme. I'm not one of those. I didn't particularly like it. I didn't particularly like the one lug nut. I'm still watching racing. You know, I want to enjoy it for the racing. So I didn't let it affect me to that level. But I was not a fan of it. If sponsors are happy with it and they're coming in, as you said, Sharon, new ones coming in or willing to put more out there for the teams, then I am all in favor of it because that allows the sport of racing to continue, which is what I am a fan of. So that just means I got to accept it.
Exactly. And then drivers like Ryan Truex, who we know is a talented driver, if he can get a sponsor because the sponsor can get better visibility on those cars, that's a very positive thing. So we'll have to see if the exposure of that information from Kroger being extremely happy and loving the placement of their ads on the cars and moving the number forward, allowing them to have that greater exposure. I think that that can be a very positive thing. I hope that Ryan Truex does get some sponsors so that he can race full-time and contend for a championship. He deserves that. He's worked hard. You mentioned other drivers like Ryan Preece. We've seen Alex Bowman go through that, and he was able to get sponsorship eventually that landed him in a full-time ride. We need to see more of that, and I think that would be extremely healthy for the sport to see sponsors coming back to us. And if more exposure on the car is what's doing it, that's definitely a win all the way around. So to me, I didn't care where the number is. I think as long as I can see the number and it's on the car, I think that's a positive thing. And to me, it didn't really matter where it was. But to see that the sponsors are happy with it or the vendors are happy with it just makes it that much more of a plus. So I think it was a good move by NASCAR. Thanks.
most certainly. And that's one of those of, like I said, being in that position as a NASCAR executive and working with the sponsors as partners made that decision. I say as a fan, and it's one of those I'll say I'm used to or accustomed to. If I had my choice, I would still put it back in the middle. But I'm not the one then that has to answer to a sponsor or be looking for a sponsor either. So I understand it and accept it, if you will. Like I said, it wasn't something that affected me greatly where I was protesting out in the streets or anything. I just had an opinion and a preference. The more important preference is to the sponsors. That's one of those that then it ties into that because that is needed. I'm a fan of racing. Racing needs the sponsors to continue and put better teams and drivers out on the track. Then I'm in favor of it. So, like I said, great to hear that it did get the feedback that they wanted. You know, that was one of those if they said, hey, they think this will work better for us, and it appears to be doing so. Then by all means, again, I'm glad that it worked out that way as well.
Yes, indeed. And I'm not I understand why fans were not happy with it when NASCAR first made that decision. But I get, why people weren't happy with it. But in the end, the proof is going to be in the pudding, Jay, when it's all said and done. If it brings us more sponsors, then it definitely was a very good move. So that's what we've got to watch for, is now that this guy has come out and said that, and NASCAR's put it out there, or Adam Stern actually put it out there for everyone to see, and you mentioned they talked about it on the broadcast as well. Now we watch and wait and see, does it bring us new sponsors into the sport or bring former sponsors back into the sport? That's where the real proof in the pudding is. So now we wait and see if drivers like Ryan Truex do indeed get sponsors that allow him to race full time. One of the reasons they come back is that they get greater exposure on the car, then I think that it's proven itself to be a very good move. So we'll wait and see what happens.
Well, and that's one of those, if I can go on kind of a little side rant, I mean, it applies to this, but also just mm-hmm. the world of, you talk about when you go to a whatever restaurant, I'll use that as a prime example, of your Yelp rating. If you have a negative issue, a lot of people are really quick. I mean, the minute they leave, they post a negative. To see the positive, for the head of Kroger to come out and say, hey, we asked for this, we got it, and it's working, and we're happy with it, to show that positive and appreciation for it, like you said, it'll encourage other sponsors then to say, hey, this is working, we made some good changes and progress, influencing them to also come join NASCAR. But just to see the positive versus always being on the negative side of if something doesn't work or isn't the way you want it, saying, hey, this is and it's working and we're happy for it. The world needs more of that. And I'm done with that rant.
Yeah, that's okay. And I know what you're talking about. Somebody goes to the restaurant, they have a bad experience, and they write a bad review. And sometimes you got to give, even though it was a bad experience that time that you were at that restaurant, sometimes giving them another chance can see whether or not that bad review maybe resulted in changes being made. And now it's a positive experience because of the negative review that you get. So negative reviews are not always a bad thing. They can lead to positive changes. I'm not going to say it always leads to positive changes, but I think how you give that review if it is a constructive review of where changes can be made, I think that can be a positive thing. So we'll see how this lands out and see if does indeed bring us some more sponsors, and that's going to be the positive side of it.
We got to use the drinking word today, Sharon, consistency. You talk about if you have a bad experience at a restaurant, go back, try it again, and see if it's a consistently bad experience versus being a one-time deal.
Exactly. That's a good one. All right. Where do you want to go next?
Well, you put this one up, so you'd obviously read it. This was news to me, but John Wood taking on a team president role at the Wood Brothers. So I'll let you start with that one.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of cool. John Wood, we saw it happen with Ben Kennedy. I was so happy to see Ben Kennedy come up through the ranks. He raced in the Can-Am Pro Series. It's now the ARCA Menards Series. He's got a racing team that still races in the ARCA Menards Series. He raced in the Truck Series. I think he might have raced a couple of Xfinity. I may or may not be correct on that. But what I liked is that Ben Kennedy raced through the ranks, and knows it from a team owner perspective. He knows this business from a driver perspective. And then he went on to become an executive within NASCAR's ranks. His family owns NASCAR. And he was able to make some really good decisions, I think, popular decisions, maybe some that we questioned at first, but turned out to be really good things that happened within this sport. Well, now we see John Wood, who was a race car driver racing in the Can-Am Pro Series, the ARCA Menard Series, and now raced in the Truck Series. And now seeing him taking on the team president role at Wood Brothers Racing, I think that is fantastic to see. I think it makes them better leaders when they can experience this sport from a lot of different perspectives. So I'm kind of excited to see John Wood taking on that role with Wood Brothers. I think it's going to help them as an organization and help them maybe create a more competitive team. We'll see how it plays out, but I'm happy to see that happening with John Wood and taking on that role at Wood Brothers. What are your thoughts, Jay?
Yeah, there's several aspects to this. Looking at it, it says he's going to take over the team president duties from his father, Eddie Wood, who's stepping down from the day-to-day to see it stay within the family. We've talked about this as NASCAR as a whole, looking at it maybe five years, even maybe 10, of some of these owners of who's going to replace them. And now we've seen Trackhouse Racing, Justin Marks and Pitbull come in, Michael Jordan with Denny Hamlin. But some of these powerhouse teams such as Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs. And unfortunately, I got to tie in a little bit of a bad situation here. Both of those aren't going to go to family members, as we lost Coy Gibbs as well as Ruben Hendrick. But we see that Jeff Gordon on HMS side being the one to kind of stepping into that role. And then at Joe Gibbs Racing, I'm not sure who it is there. But Roger Penske, another one that we've talked about. So to see it stay within the family with the Wood Brothers, I think is great. And you hit on some things there of not just the aspect of doing all roles as coming from a driver, but also a current driver trying to change. Sometimes you got to change that mentality, unlearn some things, and adapt to the way they are now. And I know, unfortunately, with Richard Petty Motorsports, they struggled with that and had to partner with a team that was on that level of current day. You know, the old ways aren't working as like they used to, so you got to adapt. And I think that may help, as you said, with them consistently finishing. Now you got that in my head. I don't know how many more times here during Hot Topics I'll use that word. But being able to run consistently towards the front, get that 100th victory. And the heritage of that team to NASCAR is very huge. So I think it is a good thing, and I hope to see some fruit produced from it down the road so that they can continue to excel.
Yes, indeed. And you bring up a good point, too. It's really good to see a family-owned team passing on to the next generation. I think Eddie Wood is still going to be involved. He's just not going to be involved in the day-to-day as he has been, and he's now allowing his son to take on that role. And so I'm excited. Wood Brothers has been around for a long time, and I'm excited to see the next generation of the Wood family kind of taking an active role within that organization and keeping it in the family, as you said. And we are seeing that this transition taking place in a lot of organizations within NASCAR. And as you mentioned, it's not just family members in some of those cases. You're watching other people like Jeff Gordon taking over the reins at Hendrick Motorsports. I think Mr. H is still involved, but I think Jeff Gordon is taking over the day-to-day duties of that organization, and we see him at the racetrack quite a lot. And you mentioned Jimmy Johnson going over to Legacy Motor Club, and what a great addition that has been to that organization. It's unfortunate what's happened to Eric Jones with his back and everything, but then you watch Corey Heim. Corey Heim did very, very well in that car for the first time ever driving a Cup Series car. He jumped in there and did, I think, a commendable job in that vehicle, subbing for Eric Jones. Eric Jones has been up in the top 10 quite a lot as well. So we've seen improvements within Legacy Motor Club with Jimmy Johnson coming over and adding his expertise. And he's getting behind the wheel of the car as, so that he can understand what's going on with the car and can make better decisions as a co-owner of that organization. So I think that we're seeing the benefits of some of those kinds of decisions, and I think it's great.
Yeah, I think the two key elements it does tie into, and we've hit on both, the family legacy, the Wood name, the Wood brothers' name, but also the driver aspect. You mentioned Jimmy Johnson there. His hasn't been as successful. I think they said this morning his best finish has been 27th maybe. But like you said, of understanding then so that he can understand what the organization needs to do and focus on in the direction they need to go. The one that comes to mind as far as that, of again, it's not a family, but being invested in ownership, is Brad Keselowski at Roush Fenway Keselowski.
There you go.
You know, Brad
yeah.
wants to bring that to that organization, and we've seen the benefits of it. So I think that driving experience from it certainly plays a huge factor in it when it comes to that. So we'll see if that pays out for the Wood brothers as well, but also then tying in the legacy and the, you know, from that, the team owner or the team, the Wood brothers name. But we've talked about legacy when it comes to so many things. Yes, you got to evolve, but you don't want to give up on everything from your past when it comes to tradition. And with that, I'll just talk about tracks. We're talking about North Wilkesboro for the All-Star race, bringing that back. The pylon, some of these pylons at track, you want to maintain, although you're making improvements and growing, you want to maintain some of those traditional aspects of the sport. So I think with John Wood moving in there, that ties them both together.
Yeah, and just another side note to all of that is drivers like Harrison Burton have taken a really bad rap that he – a lot of people feel like maybe he doesn't have the talent. I think you got to give these guys a little bit of a break. Ford in overall has been challenged, and they are struggling right now. So I don't think you can blame the driver necessarily. Can they be part of the solution? Certainly. But I do think that you've drivers a little bit of a break when it comes to judging their talent behind the wheel. If the manufacturer itself has been struggling, you can't blame that on the driver necessarily. So I say we give those drivers a little bit of a break. I think we have seen some glimmers of hope for Harrison Burton that he may be able to pull out of this. And a move like bringing John Woods in as a as the president of their team, I think can be a positive move to kind of help Ford, but it can also be a positive move to help the drivers of that organization as well.
Certainly, certainly a true aspect there, and we talked about him during the Cup Series review of Noah Gregson. Didn't seem to be meshing well at Legacy. Got this second chance here at Stewart-Haas Racing. And again, you mentioned it. Fords are not exactly on top of their game to the level they want to be, but we see that hope with Noah Gregson. So it shows his talent as well as the promise of the manufacturer and them coming around and moving up the chart to be competitive. So I think it is a good thing, yes.
Okay, so our last topic. Do you want to the last topic here then is Kyle Larson on the aero blocking. We did talk about that during the review part of the show. Denny Hamlin talked a little bit about the aero blocking. Along with that is the use of the rear camera. Some people are saying that the answer to that is to remove the rear camera. What are your thoughts about aero blocking, Denny?
First off, this isn't a new thing. I mean, think about it. It was Tony Stewart that was still racing when he had an issue with blocking. It is just a matter of how they are doing it now. Kyle Larson talked about it in his post-race, saying that Denny Hamlin did what he was supposed to do in blocking. It's just a matter of with this car, is how Kyle Larson said it, with this car, which already doesn't like to be back in traffic, be in dirty air. And that's where the key element to me comes in. I'll come back to it. So, you know, he said that he thought maybe that removing the camera would be the fix action. And my immediate thoughts kind of paired up with Matt Weaver posted an article on it that I added to our list there. Same thing of what Denny Hamlin said. You can take the camera away, and that may be a part of it, but you're still going to have your spotters telling you where the guy is catching you, what line he's running. So you're not going to take that away. I think the key element is in then working with the car. Now, I think it was Denny Hamlin talked about it being in the tires, doing something different with the tires. I know NASCAR has kind of said, hey, we're done messing with the package. We're going to look at the tires or whatever. I still think it is in the package itself, whether it's the air diffuser, the front end. Being that we're talking about it being the air, I just think it is in something that needs to be worked on within the car. And this is coming from a non-mechanical, non-aero guy. Yes, the tires will be a factor, and we're going to see hopefully some of that when it comes to the All-Star race and the tire package or the option tire they're talking about. We've seen it in the past that they're looking in that direction, and that's great. But I don't think they should quit working on the car because I think that is where anything that when it comes to aero, it is about the car. I mean, we've seen that in throughout the generations, and I cover 3 decades of watching racing. It is about the car and how the air goes around it. That's why they were spending millions of dollars to be in the wind tunnel. So that's why I feel at least a major part of it is in the car itself. As to what part and why and how, that I got no clue whatsoever when it comes to that. But I think that they still need to keep an eye on that and try and work on that aspect of it.
Yeah, I'm going to address that first because I know NASCAR has pretty much said they're not going to make a lot of more changes to the car. And the reason that they've made that decision is because they're trying to attract a new manufacturer into the sport. And that's part of the condition, I guess, that the new manufacturers have. And if you think about it, one of the things that they were trying to achieve with the next gen car is to make it more like the street car. It's never going to be identical to the street car, but we used to have the adage, if you win on Sunday, you're going to sell on Monday. And that's what a lot of these manufacturers are looking for from these cars. And so when you think about the thing that I think about, because I agree somewhat with what you're saying, Jay, is that they've got to look at ways to deflect that air differently so that it's not blocking the cars from being able to pass, because that's how they're using the air right now. But that requires making a change to the car, and it becomes less like a street car and makes it less of an advantage for the manufacturer to sell that car on Monday. So So NASCAR has kind of taken that off of the table and said that they're looking at the tires in order to make those changes because they don't want to make any more changes to the car. Again, to attract a different manufacturer to come into the sport. So I think that's off the table at least for now, and unless they change their direction of what they're trying to accomplish with this next-gen car, I think that we have to kind of let it go, if you will, for that reason. But I agree with you with what you're saying, if that makes sense, because I wish that they could make some changes when it comes to deflecting the air off of the car so that maybe the air gets deflected up higher, if you will, or something. I don't know what the answer is, but to deflect the air differently so that it doesn't impact the ability for those cars to be able to pass and so that it doesn't impact the blocking that they're talking about, the aero blocking, where somebody gets caught up in the leader's air and it spins their car to a point that they can't compete for that victory. So, yes, I agree with you that I wish that there were things that they could do, but I think NASCAR is pretty much taken off of the table any aero changes. Now maybe they'll contradict that somewhere down the road. That will make us happy, but at the same time, I think the tire is where they need to make some changes for the short term anyway, to put the competition back into the hands of the drivers and the crew chiefs and give us the strategy races more competitiveness from that perspective. NASCAR says they're still working on it, so I think that they'll do it. As far as the rear camera and making changes from that perspective, I kind of agree that taking the rear camera away, and Denny Hamlin said it in his post-race interview, and if you haven't heard that yet, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that interview. I believe it was in the third half hour of the show. Denny Hamlin says, if you take the rear camera away, it's not going to stop people from aero blocking because the spotters will be telling them, or they'll be using the rearview mirror. Now, the rearview mirror may not be as reliable as the rear camera. I would almost rather have them have the rear camera if that's what they're using to do their aero blocking. Because I think it would be more accurate than the rearview mirror would be. But even if you take the rearview mirror and the camera out of the equation, I think Denny and Matt Weaver are correct. The spotter is still going to be there. Now, is the spotter perfect? No. Spotters make errors too. And so there's some vulnerability there. But the human error, the human factor of racing is always going to be there. I would almost rather have them have the rear camera and have them use it more effectively, I guess, than for them not to have it. But I don't think it's going to make a difference either way because human error is always going to be a factor. as far as aero blocking itself, it's unfortunately going to be a factor of racing since NASCAR's made the decision that they've made. I would rather not to see them block at all, but it's a tool that they have in their tool belt and they are using it. So I've had to kind of resign myself to the fact that it's going to be part of racing. I don't necessarily like it, but it is the tool that they have to use in an era where they don't have a lot of other tools to give them a competitive advantage. So I think it's pretty much going to be part of racing moving forward. What's your follow-up on that, Jay?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, blocking it has been, and I said that even back when Tony Stewart was the one that voicing his opinion about it because he also did it. you know, if you're at the dirt track, again, it's not necessarily aero. It is more of the actual car itself, but that is part of it. I know we kind of talked about this a couple of weeks ago when you talk about other series such as Formula One that have the one block or one move to block rule. I certainly don't want to see it come to that because, again, then you're talking about judgment calls of did he make a second move or, you know, another rule that has to be enforced and can cost a team the race. So I don't want to see it go that direction, but that kind of almost seems to be if you really want to eliminate it or minimize it, that would be the only way. The tire issue, when it comes to that, I'm all in favor of working on the tires and giving teams other tools, as you said, and other options as far as that then. But it's no different than a car that has extra horsepower. You have more horsepower, you pull out, you go to pass them. If that car in front of you blocks you, it doesn't matter that you have more horsepower. So there's so many factors, and several of them, as you said, like our staples, they're just going to be a part of racing. How badly somebody uses it, and badly, I mean how frequently and how aggressively they use it, is the factor. And I just look back to the Talladega race. The first block Michael McDowell made up the track was good. Brad anticipated it, cut underneath it, and got around the block. It was the second one, and that was the bad one, where when he went to make it, I'm not even sure he clipped Brad, but when he got down to the bottom of the track, he couldn't even handle his own car, kind of had to check up and come back up the track, then came across the nose of Brad, who just didn't lift. He did nothing wrong, but that's what caused it. So that's where I think it's one of those of, you know, and this is one of those I said from the beginning, I know it's tough in the moment, Sharon, you pointed this out, you're in the moment, obviously things are different, but at some point, if somebody's alongside you and pulling away from you, you got beat. I mean, you know, as they're to the in front of you, you can hook them, turn left and hook them. Okay, you know, that's not wrong either. At some point, you got to accept you got beat. So that's where I think the big thing is. What bothers me with the aero is Kyle Larson obviously had a better line. I'm not going to say better driver, better car, was gaining. And once he got to that point where Hamlin started moving up and around the track to take his line away is one thing. But with this air now that's pushing that car back where they can catch you but they can't pass you, that's where I have the problem. And I understand that. And that's where I think a lot of this driver's talking about getting out and talking about how it's impossible, which they're using an extreme word, but they're saying it's impossible to pass. That's where I think a lot of this is coming from. Because they get to that car, and once that car starts moving around and putting air in different spots, they can't even get to the bumper or get alongside of them to try and make the pass. So I understand that from that aspect. And again, for me, from a fan's perspective and what limited knowledge I got, if you're talking about aero blocking, then obviously the problem is in the aero, which is in the body and the car. I understand what you're saying, Sharon. I hadn't taken that perspective. I'm not looking to take the look of the way away from the car when you're talking about it, trying to induce other manufacturers to want to come in. I understand that, and I understand the common template where they're trying to keep rules the same versus what we had back 10, 15 years ago where there was a Ford template, there was a Toyota template, and then whether or not each one had the same numbers when it came to wind tunnel and stuff. Yeah, that got real messy. So I understand that the reasoning behind going to the one template, but giving them some freedom to have their look of their manufacturer. I'm all for that. But I think some minor things can be done either to the front splitter. And again, I say this, I get limited knowledge, but and safety then ties in. I know the front splitter and sealing that to the track ties into safety, air not getting underneath. So that also comes into play when you start messing around with the aero and different things with the aero. That underside diffuser, nobody sees that anyway. That's not manufacturer design. Like you said, of how that air comes out the back and splits up or pushes on a car, maybe adjust that. Just something, like I said, I don't want to see them abandon it and only think that it's the tires. Because I think there is still some things that could be done in the aero side of it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that there definitely are things that could be done. But I think NASCAR's kind of closed the door on that and said that they're going to work with the tires. So, you know, the thing that everybody needs to remember is that everybody has the same thing. It's not like we're not seeing passing. There definitely has been passing taking place. Drivers have just had to readjust again and look for how they can get past that car with taking that error into consideration. I don't think we can say that there's no passing that's happening because the stats just don't back that up. There is passing, and we've seen drivers race through the field and come, you know, Denny Hamlin did it last week at Dover. He was able to come from the back and race through that field and be there at the end. So the other thing that we have to keep in mind is that the drivers are making the decision to use that arrow to their advantage. So that has nothing – they're using it, okay? They can choose not to do that, but then they wouldn't have that tool in their toolbox. So they're using the situation because everybody has exactly the same thing, and they're using that arrow to their advantage. So whether they're going to use the back camera, their spotter, their rear view mirror, whatever, they're using that to their advantage. That's not any different than what drivers did back in the day. They used what they had, because everybody has the same level playing field, although back in the day they probably didn't have the same level playing field because there were cars, some cars that were far better than other cars on the track. But now, you know, the cars are pretty similar and are pretty much the same. So it's whoever's figured out how to use what they have to their advantage, those are the drivers that are excelling right now. Right now, that's Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports. As soon as people figure out what they're doing, the other teams are going to catch up, and then, you know, they're going to fall back. So this is what happens in this sport. So I think that NASCAR will make some changes as it relates to the tire package along with Goodyear. They'll make those changes, and hopefully we'll see better racing. I think we're already seeing better racing. But to say that we're not seeing any passing on the track, I think, is erroneous. I think that we are seeing passing, but we're also seeing cars using that aero advantage to keep their track position, and it does make it harder for the other cars. But again, I go back to what Eric Jones said. It's my job as the driver to figure out how do I get around that. And I think that's going to be the next thing. You're going to have drivers that are going to figure that out, whether it's a team effort to distract the driver so that another driver can, you know, get down there or whatever to get around the car. They're going to figure it out. These drivers are smart. The teams are smart. And I think that they're going to figure it out, and we're going to see better racing as a result.
Yeah, and there's something with that of how you set your car up then. And I think about it this week from the past week at a local dirt track. Sprint cars, if it's a one lane, everybody's running the same lane, you got to have a car that will go down low. And we've seen drivers, and I'll use Kyle Larkin, really good at running the top. But when somebody's taking that line, you got to have the car and the driver and the ability to adjust your line. As you said, Eric, it's my job now to get around it, work around it. So you have the car that can go to the bottom and at least maintain or put your position where you can try make a move if it's gains a little bit, you know, versus the big gains you may be making up running the groove your way, but be able to adjust to that. And Kevin Harvick comes to mind talking about at Phoenix where he used to be able to hit the bottom. Well, then everybody wanted to go down there on that Harvick line. Well, now everybody's down there. What do you got to do? run or not. Go to the top side and figure out how to make your car work up there. So when you get in that line of everybody's running on the bottom, you go to the top, you're making it work, and nobody else is up there, you're golden.
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes when you make changes, there are unintended consequences. And so, you know, just because they make a change doesn't mean that that change might help one avenue, but then it gives you an unintended consequence and creates another problem. So be careful what you ask for is part of my message here. Because I think that there are other ways to work around it, and that I do think that the drivers have a way of figuring things out with time.
Well, and you're right about that, and that's where I said my first answer would be something on the front splitter. Like you said, you start making changes to that, now you got an issue with safety because the car's lifting up off the ground and, you know, the front end's getting up in the air and lifting the front end. That you're right. There are some other avenues that might be affected. You're thinking aero with the as far as the car and the passing, but you got to look at all the things. So it's no easy task for NASCAR. I'm not by any means, and that's why I said I can't give them a hard answer because I don't have that knowledge. I just hope that they continue to look at the aero side of it as they're working with the tire. Because again, I'm in favor of the tire thing. When it comes to that, of having some different options within rules. And go back, this might even be before your time, Sharon, talk about the tire wars where the tires were getting, you had a Goodyear. Hoosier.
Hoosier
at that time. There you go. They were going softer and softer and softer, you know, trying to give them the advantage, but they got to the point where it was a safety issue. You know, you got to save racers from themselves, because if you give them that window, they'll push it and go beyond what they should. So that's why we have rules. I get having rules, you know, and any driver will tell you that. Sometimes you got to save us from ourselves. There's no doubt about that. I just, like I said, overall hope they continue to look at all options and not only focus on one side.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right. I think that's the end of our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off segment. And why don't we go ahead and do our sign off here, Jay?
All right. Well, hopefully we have consistently brought you good information today. Had to get it in one more time. you can follow me on Facebook, Mopar, or Michael Hoosman on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Great to be on here today. I know we had some complications last night, so great to get the show in today and be able to chat with you about racing, Sharon.
Yes, indeed. And Jay, speaking of that, I believe this is week number 12 that we're doing a preview show. Does that mean that after this week, you'll be back the following week? Hey, are you still there?
I think maybe you've got the mute button. Yeah.
Yep,
I did while you were going to do your closing. A couple weeks, May 9th, this week will be the second. Yeah, this would have been, we got two more weeks. We had a holiday in there that moved some things around. But I'll call and talk to you about that offline and look forward to what we do moving forward.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I am Fan for Racing on Twitter, Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio on Facebook, as well as our website, fanforracing.com. Always fun to do this show here at this time it's the podcast. Yeah, we did run into some technical issues last night that forced us into a podcast today. But we will be back for Thursday's podcast as well. And I usually release that immediately after we conclude the show. Definitely looking forward to working with Brian again this Thursday as we preview the upcoming races at Kansas Motor Speedway. This time it's the Xfinity Series taking a break, and they will not be on the track this week, but we'll get to see the Truck Series back on track. So looking forward to the races as well at Kansas. And Again, thanks for being here, Jay. I really appreciate it. Sal had to work today and couldn't do the podcast, and he wasn't able to do it tomorrow night either, or tonight either. So this worked out really well. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you on Thursday.
All right. Have a good week.
We are getting ready for our interview with John Hunter Nemechek with NEMCO Motorsports, and he should be here.
Blog Talk Radio.